Well, if you think winning Olympic gold gave skater Scott Hamilton his greatest happiness, think again. If you think winning four consecutive U.S. championships or four consecutive world championships was the ultimate in joy for Scott Hamilton, you'd be wrong. Happiness? Let's talk about that. Scott Hamilton says he's happier now than ever before. He's married, has two sons, and he's survived both testicular cancer and a brain tumor. Scott Hamilton will be in town this week as part of TEDxKC, and he joins us now. And Scott, welcome. What a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me on. Great to talk to you. I'm excited about coming to Kansas City.
Oh, that's great. Well, you've had more than your share of stuff in your life, Scott. When you were two, you contracted a mystery illness that halted food digestion for you. Ice skating probably helped you overcome it. And yet, you're the author of this book, The Great Eight, How to Be Happy Even When You Have Every Reason to Be Miserable. That suggests that you powered through all these difficulties with a smile on your face. Is that really true?
Well, it's kind of, you know, we have something to compare every day to that's not so great. Every day kind of becomes a little bit easier, a little more joyful. You know, I've experienced just about everything. A childhood illness that kept me in and out of hospitals for, 4 years. Then, you know, cancer in 1997, full chemotherapy, pretty huge surgery. And then the two pituitary brain tumors, you know, one in 2004 and one in 2010.
Yeah.
You know, I joke that I have a unique hobby of collecting life-threatening illness, but it's just sort of almost a joke. But, you know, when you have something to compare it to and you realize that, you know, every day presents its own opportunity to find, you know, joy in it, you know, I meet a lot of people that are very pessimistic, angry, you know, just feeling like maybe life hasn't really been fair. You know, there's always a bigger fish, and there's always ways of, you know, really creating coping mechanisms for each individual setback. It allows you to know that, you know, this life is kind of, you know, to borrow an expression from a long time ago that doesn't really exist anymore, is kind of an e-ticket ride. You know, you get to really experience something phenomenal that, you know, really only lasts from, you know, A to B, and, you know, to try to pull as much as you can out of that time, especially since I have something to compare it to, is a great opportunity. So why not take advantage of it?
But when you were going through some of your difficult medical stuff, were you able to get through it with a smile on your face, or was it a different experience for you?
Well, I'll go to cancer because that's kind of the biggest one. I lost my mother to cancer, and it was kind of a driving event in my life for pretty much throughout my life. You know, I decided that when I lost her, I was not going to mourn her by being sad or angry or upset. I was going to get to work. And so I took her with me every single day to the ice, and I made sure that in, you know, all my decisions and actions, I was somewhat accountable to her. And it changed everything. I went from being kind of a perennial underachiever to kind of being a massive overachiever. And then when I went through cancer myself, I remembered how my mother went through hers, and I kind of wanted to channel her through my cancer experience. And no one was allowed in my room unless they made me laugh or smile.
Huh.
And I didn't want that episode, knowing that it was going to be, you know, a bumpy ride, but an episode. I didn't want it to remember it with, you know, just memories of, you know, suffering and pain and anguish and all the other stuff. I wanted to remember it, you know, by the fact that my oncology nurse treated me like I was an 8-year-old child, decorating my chemo bags and giving me SpongeBob and Scooby-Doo Band-Aids. I wanted to remember how everybody that walked into my room either walked in with a skinhead wig or Beaglepuss glasses and would bring in funny movies for me to watch. And, you know, that's how I wanted to remember my cancer. You know, again, I could have wallowed in and just allowed nothing but lower lips in my room. You know, the how could this happen to you, of all people? You know, instead it was like teeth. All I saw was teeth. It was like, hey, what are we going to do today?
Yeah.
And that really helped drag me through, you know, a couple of times when I really didn't feel good at all. And so, you know, it's kind of, you know, how you look at things and how you, you know, kind of determine what your situation that day is going to look like and feel like.
Olympian Scott Hamilton is my guest. What was tougher for you then, Scott? Was it winning Olympic gold, or was it in 1997 testicular cancer? I mean, what was the bigger challenge?
Well, I mean, you know, at both there's something at stake.
Yeah.
You know, if I win an Olympic gold medal, I kind of have a little crack in the door open for, you know, opportunity in the future. And, you know, honestly, with cancer, it's your life. You know, this is, you know, you've got to do everything you can right, participate in the treatment of your cancer correctly. And in many respects, it's the same discipline of bringing quality each day to make sure that, you know, every day is another brick in the foundation of your future. And so, you know, there's nothing, not really that all or nothing pressure that is that Olympic performance or the performances that go into that gold medal, but, you know, it comes down to there are big events throughout. It's the last day you have your chemotherapy. You know, you kind of hit the end of that marathon with your chest out and you just hit the tape on time and that's your goal. And then through the surgery, you know, the surgery for that particular type of cancer is kind of a big one. It's 38 staples. And when you're, you know, kind of 5 foot nothing, 38 staples is kind of a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's how do you respond from that to get back to being active and athletic?
Well, I'm just,
you know, it's a bit of a challenge.
Well, just guessing here, Scott, I mean, as a world-class athlete, you mentioned that your mom had suffered from cancer, but I'm wondering, as a world-class athlete, did you think that you were somehow beyond something like cancer because you were so fit?
No, I think that, you know, everything they told me coming in was that it's a great thing that I was fit because I would better endure the treatment and, you know, kind of the protocol that I was facing. And they were right. I mean, I was really way better. You know, they called my blood vessels, they basically called them sewer pipes because, you know, I pumped so much blood in my activity that they're able to get IVs and they're easily ports for chemotherapy and easily. And so the fact that I was in really good physical condition, you know, allowed me to, you know, kind of participate in my treatment at a much higher level.
Yeah. You know, I was really struck by the fact that you went through, you know, more difficulty in 2004 with a brain tumor. It recurred in 2010. And I'm wondering, are you gun-shy now, given what you've been through?
Yeah, you know, you can be gun-shy. You can say, well, I got through that one, and I got through that one, and I got through that one.
Yeah.
I'll probably be okay. You know, it's funny. I do a lot of speaking, you know, just to different groups, and I try to be inspirational and motivational, and I try to reassure people that, you know, you're going to go through some pretty tough times in your life, but I'm here to tell anyone that'll listen that nothing great in my life happened without something pretty rough happening before it. I used to think that I was doomed, like for every good thing something bad was going to come on the tail end of it, but I kind of realized through my survivorship of cancer that it was kind of the other way around. It was for something, you know, unfortunate, something great was coming, and it allowed to be much more optimistic. And it's the same with anything else. You know, once you have something to compare it to, you know, then it kind of it builds your better understanding of what you're able to endure. It's kind of like what Malcolm Gladwell wrote in, you know, David versus Goliath. You know, he said, was the bombing of London something that was going to bring fear to them? Well, no. I mean, it built their strength, their confidence, and their courage because of, you know, they realized that they suffered through so many bombings that they're probably going to be okay no matter what. And that's kind of what going through cancer then again has kind of taught me is that, you know, I've been through this three times. More than likely, I'll be fine the next time around.
You know, Scott, you have a foundation, the Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation. Your mission is to turn cancer upside down.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, it's just, you know, cancer is kind of, it's an insidious disease, but there's so much out there to do. Let's just change it from being in fear of cancer to being something more proactive. Let's create information portals where people understand better what they're about to endure. And I firmly believe that information is power and it's also comfort. So we've created a lot of that. And, you know, there's a sense of isolation that comes with cancer. We've created a peer-to-peer mentorship program called Fourth Angel that really puts cancer patients with survivors the same, you know, options. So they're looking and talking to a role model and somebody that realizes, oh, I can be that person. So, you know, we're taking a lot of the fear and isolation away from cancer that way. And then cutting-edge research. I mean, there's so much to be done out there. I mean, the day they mapped the genome, okay?
Yeah.
You know, it was always kind of that business model of the money is going to drive the research. Well, now, I mean, the science has so far outgunned the money now that we've got so much to catch up to the science to learn about. There's so much to know. There's, you know, is this gene responsible for that? How do we turn that off and turn this on? And there's all of this science to now be funded that, you know, we've got to do everything we can to create funding options for cancer research that allows people to really participate in a healthy way, knowing that we've got so much to do for the money to catch up to the science now.
Bob from Leawood is on the show. Bob, welcome to Up to Date. You're on with Scott Hamilton.
Hi, thanks. Scott, I was teaching in suburban Chicago about, I guess it's almost 30 years ago now, and a student of mine had Schwachman syndrome.
Yes.
And you were so kind to send a letter to him, encouraging him and so on. Unfortunately, he did pass away at the age of 19 or 20, but I really was impressed that you sent a letter encouraging him and talking to him about it.
Well, I was misdiagnosed with Schwachman syndrome. I had pretty much every symptom of Schwachman-Diamond syndrome, but, you know, here's the crazy thing. I was actually, for months, I was, you know, in Dr. Schwachman's hospital with Dr. Schwachman, and he was doing everything he could to, you know, figure out if that's exactly what I had. And, you know, here's the punchline. In 2004, all these years later, I was diagnosed with a craniopharyngioma brain tumor. Craniopharyngiomas are brain tumors you're born with that affect the growth and development of a child. There was no technology, and for whatever reason, you know, technology defined that brain tumor back then, but also, you know, for whatever reason, the years that I skated, the brain tumor stopped doing its mischief. So I had the pleasure of getting to know Dr. Schwachman. He was a great man. In 1984, after my Olympics, I skated in Boston, and I invited him to be my special guest, and I introduced him from the ice to the audience and let people know what a great man he is and what he did for me, because he was the one that pretty much told my parents to go home, let him live a normal life, get him involved in activities, and that's the reason I started skating.
Bob, thanks for the call. Scott, did you write letters like that often?
You know, I do. I mean, it's, you know, when I went through my bout of cancer in 97, Cleveland Clinic didn't know what to do with the 65,000 get well cards that I got in the time that I was there. And so it's hard for me to reach out to all those that, you know, reached out to me. But I really, you know, part of the reason for the Fourth Angel Mentoring Program is to get in front of people that are going through something that you did and to allow them to know that, you know, the brighter days are ahead, or this is how you can deal with this particular circumstance. And you know, you try to encourage people and try to lift them up and allow them to know that, you know, they're in charge of, you know, how they're feeling and what they're doing on that particular day, and to do the best they can.
I should point out that Scott Hamilton is one of the presenters at this year's TEDxKC event. That's Saturday evening at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The live event tickets are sold out. The simulcast tickets are sold out. But watch party tickets are still available. Go to TEDxKC.org for more information. Scott, we just have a couple minutes left. Let's talk about ice skating. When you're competing for the Olympic gold, I'm wondering what you're thinking when you're out on the ice and you've got a minute left in your routine. What are you focusing on?
You know, it's funny. If it goes great, you know, you're focusing on just keeping the momentum going and you know, giving that last impression. If you had any issues in the beginning part of the program, you're doing everything you can to make them forget about it by selling the end of your program. You know, I lived in the area of the 6.0, and there it was more like, it's kind of was a sport of aesthetics. It was like really just selling yourself and convincing the judges that you were the best one on the ice that night. And there's lots of ways of doing it. Now it's more done by computer. It's more about numbers. And so the sport has become less interactive, you know, and it's less about sales than it is about just being proficient, which I think is the reason less and less people are watching the sport. It's kind of at a difficult place in its history. But, you know, you've prepared your whole life for that moment. You've done it so many times. It's not unusual. It's just looking up and seeing those Olympic rings on the boards tends to, you know, kind of tighten you up a little bit and make your breath a little bit shorter, you know. But, you know, again, but you've trained your whole life for it. It's not something that you're just thrust into at the last second. You know, it's something that you prepared for. And when it's over, it kind of becomes a situation of, well, now who am I?
What's the one
the person that existed until now no longer exists.
What's the one ice skating jump that you're glad you don't have to ever do again?
Oh, you know, I wish I could do them all again. You know, you get to a point where your body kind of looks up at you and says, "Not, no, I'm not doing that anymore." And I love flying. I mean, I you know, the kids now that I'm teaching through the skating academy, they all learn how to jump. And I go, wouldn't you rather learn how to fly? Wouldn't that be more fun? I mean, what would it be if a superhero could only jump? You know, we like our superheroes flying, so let's learn how to fly. And I remember just the feeling of freedom that I had doing some of those backflips, and the ones that really popped and floated. And it was like a little pop of adrenaline, and then this just euphoric feeling on the way down, knowing that it's going to land like a butterfly. And I missed that. But every life has its seasons, and I've got to respect the one I'm in right now.
You know, we do this series here at KCUR called Beyond Our Borders that looks at these big dividing lines in our community. And to that end, I wanted to ask, in your life, Scott, where did you encounter real or virtual borders that, you know, by crossing them changed your life?
You know, I have a T-shirt. I print up a bunch of T-shirts just to wear them as often as possible saying, this too shall pass, this too shall pass. There's some things that won't. I'll never dunk a basketball. You know, I got mercilessly teased, you know, when I was younger about being a figure skater because, you know, a lot of my friends thought it was a female sport. But, you know, sooner than later you hit, you know, adolescence, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a minute, he's in a girl's sport, maybe, you know, by whatever identity people put on it, but that means he has more access to girls than anybody else. Buddy, hey, friend, you know, how you doing? Can you set me up with, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, everything has its kind of beginning and end, you know, and some things you just have to endure.
Yeah. Well, Scott Hamilton is one of the presenters at this year's TEDxKC event. Go to TEDxKC.org for more information. Scott, what a pleasure to have you. Thanks for taking some time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You bet.